Parshas Ekev, page 980. Before we start, today's shiur is dedicated for the neshama of Chaya Yeter Bat Avigdor, whose yahrzeit was yesterday, and her neshama should have an aliyah. The Shabbos, besides being Parshas Ekev, is Shabbos Mevorchim El. So that's a whole new part of the year. When you know Shabbos Mevorchim El comes, it's a new journey. So it's a big Shabbos. So let's just begin with a quick overview of the parasha. We have the beginning of the parasha, which talks about Ekev. We'll go into it a bit more in a minute. Just talks about keeping the mitzvahs, and if we do, and we guard Hashem's covenant, He will give us all the blessings. We have a little bit more about the promise of the land of Eretz Yisrael. We have a section in the parasha where Hashem asks us to remember the manna that fell from heaven. Famous pasuk in this week's parasha talks about the seven fruits of Eretz Yisrael, the seven fruits with which Israel is praised. A very important pasuk. First of all, it's very unique to and descriptive of the land of Eretz Yisrael. There's some more handouts here if anyone wants. Also, it's a pasuk which is the basis of different halachas, one of them being the order of which one has to make a bracha on fruit, and so on and so forth. I think we've done this before. We also have the famous mitzvah benching in this week's parasha, the only bracha which is biblical, according to many opinions. So it's the mitzvah benching, when you eat, you have to bench. Then we have a section that talks about remembering the egel, remembering the golden calf, and the whole story with the breaking of the luchos, the tablets of the Ten Commandments, and the second tablets, and so on. We have a section which we'll go into a little bit, where Hashem asks us to fear Hashem. It gives us like a bit of a foundational speech, where we ask just to fear Hashem. And then also, of course, in this week's parasha, we have the second paragraph of the Shema, the Hayayim Shemaya. Okay. So what I want to do is I want to just look at the beginning of the parasha a little bit and then look at two other parts of the parasha which are sort of connected. Let's have a look at the beginning of the parasha, page 980. We've done this before, but I'll just give you a little bit of a slightly different angle. Where the pasuk says, V'hoya, it will come to pass. And don't forget, V'hoya is always an expression of simcha, joy. As we know, Vayihi, it was, is an expression of pain. V'hoya is an expression of joy. So the pasuk says, V'hoya, it will come to pass, Ekev v'tishmur. Now the literal translation is, well, the Rashi doesn't subscribe to that in this pasuk, but the simple literal translation would be, Ekev tishmur, and because you will listen to. The word Ekev can mean because of. For example, we have this in the very beginning of Chumash, where Hashem rewards Abraham for the binding of Yitzchak, the Akedah, and over there it says, Ekev asher shamato b'koili, because you listen to my voice, that's why I will bless you. So the word Ekev can mean because of, right? So the simple reading, if we didn't learn Rashi, would be, V'hoya, and will come to pass, Ekev tishmon, because you will listen, esa mishpatim ela, to these laws, ushmartem v'asisim oisim, you will guard them, you will do them, and what will, the consequence of that will be, v'shamar Hashem aleikecha lecha esabris, God, your God will protect the covenant, v'esa chesed, and the kindness, asher nishpa la'avoisecha, which he swore to your fathers. In other words, the kindness which Hashem gave to the patriarchs, and the covenant which he promised Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to give the land of Israel to their children, and bless them, and multiply them, and so on. Hashem says, I will keep because you will listen to the laws of Hashem. Right? So the consequence is the reward of listening to the mitzvahs of Hashem. Rashi says, on the word Ekev, Rashi says an interesting thing. Rashi says that, the famous idea, that the pasuk is actually referring to a particular kind of mitzvahs. Right? Rashi says, that, and that's what we learn from the word Ekev. Rashi highlights the word Ekev. The word Ekev means a heel, part of the body, the heel. And Rashi says that what the pasuk is talking about, the special reward that God is promising, because we listen to the mitzvahs, are specifically referring to the mitzvahs which people trample on with their foot. Right? Meaning, they don't. It's a figurative thing. They don't keep properly, they just trample upon it. Right? So we know there are various mitzvahs that people keep, and then there are mitzvahs that somehow get trampled upon. That's what Rashi learns from this pasuk. Now, two things we need to understand. First of all, what does Rashi mean? What type of mitzvahs? And second of all, Why does Rashi need to learn that? Why doesn't Rashi just say it's talking about all the mitzvahs? Why does Rashi need, what's the problem? In other words, what's bothering Rashi in the pasuk? What's wrong with doing Ekev as because? Because you will listen to Hashem, now Hashem will reward you. Seems fairly simple. Doesn't seem to be any particular difficulty with that. Although it's an unusual expression, true, but still, we do find it before in Chumash with Avraham Avinu. Ekev, because you listen to Hashem, Hashem will bless you and so on. So first of all, what does Rashi mean? What type of mitzvahs? So the many Mefarshim talk about different kind of mitzvahs. For example, there are mitzvahs which are called kalos. In other words, we have a principle in Torah, in Pirkei Avos, this is discussed, where some mitzvahs are called heavy mitzvahs, some mitzvahs are called light mitzvahs. In Hebrew, it's chamurois and kalos. Kal means light, chamur means strict. Heavy, strict, whatever. So sometimes we give, and the Pirkei Avos warns us and cautions us that we should never do that. We should never weigh up mitzvahs and say, well, this is chamurois, so it's more important than the kalos. We should always keep all the mitzvahs equally. If Hashem said we should do it, we should just do it. It doesn't make a difference if it's a big thing, a small thing, and so on. What we see from that Pirkei Avos is two things. Now, on the one hand, our approach, our attitude to mitzvahs should be, if Hashem said to do it, it's got to be done. It doesn't make a difference if a big mitzvah, a small mitzvah. On the other hand, from the fact that the Pirkei Avos tells us, do not compare or do not evaluate the strength of the heavy mitzvahs or the strict mitzvahs versus the light mitzvahs, that teaches us that there are differences in mitzvahs. It's just our attitude has to be that we can't make any differentiation because we don't know what's important, what's not important, and we don't know what ultimately will connect us more or less, right? So it's interesting, it's almost an opposite thing. There are stricter mitzvahs, for example, even if you look at the consequences in the Torah, there are things that the Torah takes more seriously in terms of consequence, punishment, whatever the case is, than others, right? So to give you an example, mitzvah of not eating chametz on Pesach, right? Let's give it as an example. It's clearly one of the chamuros. It's clearly one of the stricter mitzvahs. Not talking in the middle of davening. Maybe one could say that's kalos, that's a lighter mitzvah, right? right? In other words, it's less strict, less consequences. Now, that would have significance on some level. In other words, we shouldn't dismiss that significance altogether. I'll tell you why. I don't know if that was a good example, but let's say over here it's actually one of the chamuros in this minyan. But it's been from day one as important as not even chametz on Pesach. I'm just kidding. But for example, if someone were to come to you and say, listen, I have no connection to Yiddishkeit, I really want to grow, right? I want to start keeping the mitzvahs, right? So we know that a person has to grow, even though we have to keep all the mitzvahs and whatever Hashem, we shouldn't compare one mitzvah to another and so on. But it's true that if someone wants to start keeping mitzvahs, we never kept mitzvahs before, you can't start with everything at once. A person has to grow slowly. If a person starts everything at once, we'll fail, right? So obviously, you're not going to tell a person, well, I think you should start with not talking and davening. That would be a silly thing to do. There's more important things. Start with having a mezuzah and come to davening, exactly. Why should I come to davening, exactly? Or start with aspects of Shabbos, aspects of kashrus, whatever. There are things, obviously, that have priority. You start with either because they're easier or because they're more important, or whatever the case is, right? So there is sometimes that we do have to give significance to some mitzvahs over the other. But if a person is keeping mitzvahs, and a person wants to keep mitzvahs, what the Torah is telling us, what Pirkei Avos tells us is, do not be lenient in a mitzvah because you think it's a lighter mitzvah. That's the point. Don't ignore a mitzvah or be lax with a mitzvah because you think it's not important. If it's a program, and if you need to choose between one mitzvah and another in terms of your growth, then you need to find a spiritual mentor who will tell you what's more important than the other. But don't say, this mitzvah, how much pesa I would never eat, but this, it's all right. Hashem will understand. That's the wrong. And that's the attitude that the Torah is trying to eliminate. Do not treat lightly the light mitzvahs, because you never know their far-reach impact. You never know their importance. And the bottom line is that everything comes from Hashem. Makes no difference. Right? So if a person is already committed to, or for example, you know, on Shabbos, for example, if a person is committed to keeping Shabbos, let's say. So we know on Shabbos, there are certain mitzvahs which are stricter than others. So, for example, there are what we call d'oraisa, the biblical mitzvahs, And then there are rabbinic precautions, right? So yes, they do make a difference. For example, if someone is, let's say, unwell, not dangerously unwell, because then you can just break the whole Shabbos, but let's say someone is in need, there are certain needs where we say, it's not okay to break a biblical prohibition, but it's okay to make a rabbinic prohibition, because that's the way it was programmed to begin with. That these things are less strict, and therefore in certain circumstances you can, right? On the other hand, you know, if a person themselves is committed to Shmirah Shabbos, to keeping Shabbos, a person should never say, well, okay, so I'm going to be very careful with the derisa, with the biblical mitzvahs, but you know, which cup I make the tea, and that's, I'm not going to, but that's only rabbinic, right? No, person says, if I'm committed, I'm committed. Same Torah says you should keep one mitzvah of Shabbos, says you should keep the rabbinic prohibitions, because that itself comes from the Torah. So I'm just giving, it depends on, sometimes halacha itself will dictate that something is more strict than other, but in terms of attitude, we need to keep all the mitzvahs the same. Our approach to mitzvahs has to be the same. And that's really what the Pasuk is talking about, that v'hoyah ekev, there will come a time that you'll make sure that your commitment and your attitude and your enthusiasm and your conviction when it comes to mitzvahs is so strong that for you there's no difference between one mitzvah and another. That if you're committed, you're committed. So if you're committed to not eating chametz on Pesach, you'll be committed to not talking and davening or whatever it is, or even the small things, because it says in Shulchan Aruch, that's the thing that the Torah is talking about. That's one way to understand it. There are many other ways. But today I'll show you, there are many other ways, but let me show you a kliyoker, which is interesting. He actually flips it completely around. And he says, no, it's not talking about mitzvahs that are light. And he begins with this idea. He says, first of all, what was bothering Rashi? Why did Rashi have to do this? Why did Rashi have to talk about that? Akev doesn't mean because of, but Akev means the mitzvahs that you trample upon. Which mitzvahs is he talking about, and why did he need to explain the word Akev that way? So he says the other way around. He says Rashi was bothered by the previous pasuk. Go to the page before. Right? The pasuk before says you should keep the mitzvahs. This pasuk says if you keep the mitzvahs, Hashem will reward you. Correct? That's it. Now, so what does it say in the previous pasuk? Let's have a look at the last pasuk on page 978. So the pasuk says, "Veshomarta es haMitzvah," you will keep the mitzvah. Don't forget to keep the mitzvahs. Which mitzvahs? "Veshachukim veshamishpatim." The chukim and the mishpatim, asher anoichi metzavcha hayom la'asoisa, which I command you to do today. So what does the pasuk mention specifically? Two kinds of mitzvahs, chukim and mishpatim. Now, although we know that the mitzvahs are really divided into three, but really in a general way, they're divided into two. There's the mitzvahs that make sense, and the mitzvahs that don't make sense. Very simple, right? If you wanted to take all the mitzvahs in the Torah and divide them into two, that's how you do it. You say the rational mitzvahs, not to steal, is mishpatim. Kashrus, chukim, right? No logical reason to kashrus. Well, some people think there is, but there isn't. You know, there's been places, people who want to explain kashrus based on health, which I think is ridiculous, because there's nothing more healthy than schmaltzering with a cholent on Shabbos and then going to sleep afterwards, right? So there's plenty of treif health programs. But okay, so, I must say one shouldn't be healthy. I'm not advocating, but it's nothing to do with kashrus. So kashrus is one of the chukim. Okay, so Torah says keep the chukim and the mishpatim. Next pasuk, which is Parashas Ekev, says if you keep the mitzvahs, Hashem will reward you. What does it say? The pasuk says, the Kliyoka points out a very amazing thing. I never paid attention to this. It says, v'hoya Ekev tishmun, you'll listen to what? Es ha-mishpatim ha'ela, the mishpatim. And you'll keep them, and Hashem will promise you, he'll keep the covenant, he'll bless you. What happened to the chukim? All of a sudden, this pasuk, the chukim, first of all, why do we need almost a repetition of the pasuk? And second of all, if the first pasuk is telling us to keep the mitzvah, this pasuk is telling us the reward, what, for chukim we don't get reward? Only for mishpatim? Says the Kliyaka, this is what Rashi means. Rashi is saying the pasuk is telling you a whole new thing. The pasuk, of course, is talking about chukim. But it talks about the chukim using the word eker, because when Rashi says, talks about the mitzvahs that people trample on, he's talking about chukim. Nothing to do with strict and less strict and more strict. That's one interpretation. The Kliyaka learns, no, he's talking about chukim versus mishpatim. Why? Because people trample upon chukim. Why they trample upon chukim? Because some people have an attitude where they will only keep something if it makes sense. People tell you, I'll do it, but you have to explain it to me. It's got to make sense. It's got to talk to me. Very, very common in today's society. I'll do it if it works for me, if it talks to me. You tell me something that doesn't make sense, I just do it because someone said you have to do it. Not interested. And that's what he says, v'hoya ekev tishma'un. If you keep the mitzvah, says Rashi, which people trample on, i.e. chukim, the esa mishpatim, and the mishpatim, I will reward you. So chukim is not missing from this pasuk. It's just being explained in the pasuk. Beautiful pshat. So the pasuk before talks about chukim mishpatim, and so does this pasuk. This pasuk says chukim mishpatim, but it warns you, you need extra commitment to keep chukim, because chukim are things which people trample upon. Why? Because they don't make sense. And with that, he actually links it to a pasuk in Tehillim. And he said, I'll prove this to you. Why? Because there's a pasuk in Tehillim where David HaMelech says, Lomo ira bimeira, why am I going to be scared of Hashem in the days of bad? Because I'm scared, because avoin akeva yisubeini, the sin of my heels will surround me. So David HaMelech says, and I should have copied it, but anyway, pasuk in Tosuk Memtes, right? And the Medrash says the following. Let me read you the Medrash. The Medrash says, David HaMelech said to Hashem, you know I'm scared. You know what I'm scared about? I'm not scared about the mitzvahs that I know are important to keep. Because those I keep, I know they're important. What I'm scared is about the mitzvahs which sometimes people think are not important, right? Because I'm worried I might have transgressed some of those mitzvahs, right? And I know that you have told me, says David HaMelech to Hashem, you have told me to not make differences between mitzvahs and keep the kalos like the chamurais. In other words, the mitzvahs that you treat lightly, as good as the mitzvahs that you treat strictly. Right? Says the Kli Yakar, when did Hashem tell him this? When did Hashem tell him to keep the light mitzvahs together with the strict mitzvahs? He didn't tell him that. He says, no, he did. Because the Eikav means the chukim. He told me he has to keep chukim. Because later on it says, David HaMelech said, that where did Hashem say to keep the mitzvahs, not to make differences between the mitzvahs? In this pasuk. Because this pasuk tells us that the pasuk before says mishpatim and chukim. This pasuk is telling us you're going to think there's a difference between mishpatim and chukim. Because Eikav, mishpat, chukim are things that you trample upon. And David HaMelech was worried, maybe I made those differences. I know I learned in the pasuk you should make those differences, because Eikav has to come together with mishpatim. In other words, the chukim which you trample upon because you don't understand them are the same as the mishpatim. And that's why David HaMelech says, I've tried to keep all the mitzvahs, and that's why I'm going to ask you to protect me. Which links into another pasuk David HaMelech says. He says, in Tehillim, he says, Morav Tuvcho, he says, I know there's a great reward waiting for those that keep the mitzvahs. And he says, B'shomram Ekev Rav, for those that keep them with a very big heel. In other words, there's a tremendous reward for keeping chukim. Chukim are hard to keep. Rashi says it in Parshas Chukas. It's taka hard to keep something you don't understand. It's hard to keep something that makes no sense. But by keeping the mitzvahs, and you keep them just as great as you keep the mishpatim, with the same enthusiasm, with the same commitment, with the same conviction, there's tremendous reward awaiting that concept. Okay. That's one pshat. Just leave you with another pshat on this pasuk about mitzvahs you trample upon. So in other words, one pshat is that it's just the mitzvahs which we think aren't as strict. And the Kli Yakar says, no, they're very strict mitzvahs, but the ones you trample upon because they chuk him. So you treat them more lightly. They don't make sense. That's why you treat them lightly. There's another pshat, just a little pshat, that this mitzvah hints to another halacha. There's a halacha that you're not supposed to, on Shabbos, you're not supposed to take a psio gasa. You're not supposed to run on Shabbos, essentially. The literal translation, you're not supposed to take a big step on Shabbos, meaning like running, in other words, right? Shabbos, you're supposed to walk calmly, and if you're supposed to take small steps, measured steps. And there's an issue, there's a prohibition about not taking big steps on Shabbos. Interesting thing. Sorry? Sorry, do you mind to turn that sound if you don't mind? Yeah. It's going to be late. So it says if you're going to shul, you can walk quickly. To a mitzvah. But especially if you stop walking, you're walking from shul. Actually, generally it says it about shul. You know, that's interesting. It says if you walk to shul quickly and out of shul slowly. To shul quickly to show you're excited about the mitzvah. Out of shul slowly that you're not so excited to leave. But Shabbos also says for a dvar mitzvah on Shabbos, you can offer a mitzvah. Anyway, it says all kinds of things. It says someone takes a very big step on Shabbos, it takes away part of your eyesight, which then says when you light candles, and you make Kiddush, and you look at the candles during Kiddush, that brings back the eyesight, all different kinds of things. So some of the Mefarshim say, where's that hinted in the Torah? It's hinted over here. About the Torah saying, about the mitzvahs that you do with your heel. Which mitzvah are we talking about? Not taking a psia gas, not taking a big step on Shabbos. Just a sort of an out-the-way pshat. Not a simple pshat, but just an interesting pshat in the pasuk. That's actually a reference to the mitzvah of not taking big steps on Shabbos.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. No. No, Rashi doesn't explain it here. I'm just trying to think if Rashi explains it elsewhere. Because listen doesn't mean to listen to hear. It means to hearken to, in other words, to obey. Yeah.
As opposed to
hear. Yeah. Normally, it could be that one is more talking about positive mitzvahs as opposed to one negative mitzvahs. Because normally guarding was more about negative mitzvahs. Listening is about positive mitzvahs. Could be. I'm not sure. Don't know, but it's a good point.
Is there, how do you know the difference? Is there a listing between the difference between a chok and a mishpat?
Is there what, sorry, a listing?
Like, are they definite?
They are.
Between a chok and a mishpat.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, it depends. There are certain mitzvahs where it's a discussion if it's a chok or a mishpat. But normally it's fairly obvious. I mean, like, for example, just things that we don't have reasons for, like kashrus. There is no reason for kashrus. Parah Adumah, the red cow, for example. Shatnez, not willing wool and linen. These things don't have any reason. The Torah doesn't give a reason. We don't understand the reason. And it doesn't seem rational. On the other hand, Mishpatim, for example, all the laws to do with man and man, not stealing, having court cases properly, giving back loans, honoring parents, all these things are considered normal, civilized type mitzvahs that would normally contribute to any civilized society. And therefore, there's reasons, they're rational. There's a middle category also, but sort of more fits into the rational mitzvahs, where we don't know the reason on our own, but the Torah gives a reason. So, for example, eating matzah on Pesach is not necessarily something we'd work out. It's not something which is a normal contribution to civilized society, but it's a mitzvah which makes sense because the Torah gives a reason, because we ran out of mitzvah, we didn't have time to make bread, made a mitzvah, so therefore we eat matzah. So that's kind of, but it's normally, that's edus, it's called, edus, like testimonials. But they're rational. They're rational once the Torah explains it, they become rational, as opposed to chukim, which are not rational. Okay. All right, so that's just the first part of the parsha. Now I want to just have a look at something which is interesting, two things actually, which I want to tie in the parsha with the whole month of Elul, which is beginning, or being blessed from the Shabbos at least, which is hinted in this week's parsha. As always, we always find hints in the parsha for the days that we're in, right? So if you have a look at, give me a second, I'll just find it for you. Yeah, here we are. Have a look at page 986. Middle, towards the end of the page, about two-thirds down the page, Pasuk Tesvav, 15. Okay. Tesvav, 15, verse 15. Tesvav. Pasuk Tesvav, which is 15. Verse 15, right? Okay. So here, Moshe Rabbeinu is retelling the story of the golden calf. And he's telling the story of how he broke the luchos when he came down the mountain. Then he had to go back up on the mountain for the second set of 40 days, which Hashem did not forgive him. Towards the end, he said, okay, now we can start doing tshuva. And then, of course, the third time, Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the mountain for the third time, came down in Yom Kippur with the second set of luchos. Now, of course, all of that took place from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur, right? So we got a Torah on Shavuos. 40 days Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain to learn the Torah, came down the 17th of Tammuz, which is what he's talking about over here, broke the Luchais, went up again till Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul, didn't get Hashem's forgiveness, went up a third time, and Hashem forgave him and gave us the second Luchais, correct? So he tells a story, which of course is connected with Elul, because that's the whole concept of the 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur is about the second Luchas and the forgiveness that Hashem gave the people, which was finalized in Yom Kippur, and ever since then Yom Kippur has been a Day of Atonement. So let's have a look at some of the Pesukim, and I want to just touch on one particular verse. It says like this: Vo'efen, I turned, Vo'ered min ahar, Rashi says, I came down the mountain. V'ahar, this is on the 17th of Tammuz. V'ahar boir ba'esh, and the mountain was smoking. Ushnei luchas habris, and I had the two tablets of stone, al shtei yodo, and my two hands. I was carrying them with two hands. Va'ered, and I came down, v'hine echatosim la'ashem alakechem, you had sinned to Hashem your God. Asisim lachem egel masecha, you had made a golden calf. Sartim and aderech, you had gone astray from the way, asher tziva Hashem eschem, which Hashem had commanded you. So he says, v'espois b'shnei haluchas, so I grabbed the two luchas, va'ashlichem al shtei yodov, and I threw them from my hands, va'ashabrem le'einechem, and I broke them in front of your eyes. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asked, and then he goes on to tell about the second 40 days and the third 40 days, and then he came down eventually with the second tablets. So first of all, we have two problems in this pasuk. The first is a question that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asks. The Or HaChaim says, what does it mean, I grabbed the luchos? He was holding them. He didn't grab them from anyone. He was holding them anyway. What does it mean, I took them? What does that mean? So there are many mefarshim about this. And let me share with you just one approach that the Rebbe brings in one of these talks. He says the following. There's another question. How could Moshe Rabbeinu actually break the luchos? The problem is this. The luchos were going to be part of the Mishkan, correct? They were going to lay in the Aron, in the Ark, together with all the other vessels. So you had the menorah, you had the table, you had the Ark, you had the Mizbeach, the altar, and so on. And the luchos was seemingly part of the whole process of building of the Mishkan eventually, where the luchos, the tablets were kept. And we know that when the Mishkan was built, it was like any other organization, any other communal building. It was built by the nations from everyone. And it belonged to everyone. It was a communal effort. So we have a concept in halacha called nichsei tzibur, the property of the community. And in fact, the property of the community is considered very strict about treating communal property or communal assets carefully. Why? Because it says if someone damages communal assets, it's very hard to give back because you actually don't know who to give it back to exactly. Right? So here's Moshe Rabbeinu coming down the mountain and he's holding the luchos. And he breaks them. So the question is, what do you mean? Who gave you permission? It's not yours to break. So how does he break the luchos? Right? That's a question that the Mefarshim ask. Now there's various different halachic analysis to try and understand how this works. But at the end, one of the approaches is as follows. That actually the luchos is not quite the same as the rest of the Mishkan. Luchos were a different process. Luchos, and we know this from the second set of luchos. Because the second set of luchos, we read clearly that when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to prepare the second set, he said, "Psal lecha, carve out for you the second luchos." Right? And the Medrash tells us that the same thing happened with the first luchos. The first luchos is that Hashem, when it was finished, "Vayitain el Moshe," he gave it to Moshe. In fact, Torah, when we say Moshe kibbel Torah misinai, when Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Sinai, it actually means, according to many commentaries, not just he got the Torah to give to us. He got the Torah, it was his gift, which Hashem then asked him to be kind with his gift and to share it. So Hashem said, you will be what's called an ayin toiv, you'll be a person with a good eye, a good heart, and you will share that gift with others. In fact, we find this explicitly in the Medrash with regard to the second luchos. Because it says later when the second luchos was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu learned a whole new dimension of Torah. The whole idea of in-depth analysis and pilpul and medrash was all given with the second set of luchos, but it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu, out of the goodness of his heart, so to speak, because, I mean, it was always meant to be that way, of course, because he was a leader, and that's what a leader is. A leader is totally dedicated to the people. He came and he gave the Torah, which was his Torah, so to speak, he gave it to everyone else. So it's true about the concepts of Torah, and therefore it's true about the luchos itself. The Rebbe explains that the luchos are not like the Mishkan. How do we know this? The Mishkan Taka was an edifice or a building that was built by everyone's funds. The luchos actually were brought down the mountain before the Mishkan was ever built. Moshe Rabbeinu brought down the luchos, there was no Mishkan. So it's actually in a different category. Yes, eventually, where was the luchos housed? It was housed in the Mishkan. But really, whose luchos were there? The Moshe Rabbeinu. But the plan of Moshe Rabbeinu was to pass it on to the Jewish people. The plan was, as happened in the second luchos, he came and he gave the luchos, which were given to him, he gave to the Jewish people. The problem here was, Moshe Rabbeinu sees He's coming down the mountain, he's got the luchos, his plan is to give it to the people. But he sees a problem. He sees they have served the golden calf. Right? They've served the golden calf, so he knows, it's a concept I think which I shared with you last year, maybe a different parasha, maybe Kisisa, that if he gives them the luchos, they're in big trouble. Because he gives them the luchos, which is there now, which is theirs now, and it serves, like the Medrash says, as a marriage contract between God and the Jewish people, then they get charged with adultery, spiritually speaking. They're now in a contractual binding agreement with God, and they violated it. They've been unfaithful. They built an egel azov, they built a golden calf, serving other gods. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, as a leader, and I think I did this with you last year, amazing concept. He goes and breaks the luchos, which Hashem thanks him for at the end of the. We learn this in the end of Rashi, at the end of the Torah. What does Hashem thank him for? Because he saved the Jewish people. He broke the luchos. He broke Torah to save the Jewish nation. So they should be judged as an unmarried lady rather than a married woman. Right? That's the whole idea. That's what the Medrash says. But how does he do that? So Moshe Rabbeinu explains to the Jewish people the process. He says, I come down the mountain with the luchos. They're my luchos. I was planning to give it to you. But if I give it to you, you're going to be in big trouble because I see you serving the egel azov. So what do? Says the pasuk. Now it makes sense. Says the pasuk. V'et pois pishnei luchos. So I grabbed onto it. And I said, no, I'm not giving it to you. He was holding it already, but he was holding it first with the intention to give it to them. So he changes his mind. That's what the words mean. That's what these words mean. I grabbed onto the luchos, means I acquired them for myself. I said, no, I changed my mind. I'm not giving it to you. I'm keeping it for me. And because I'm keeping it for me, it's now mine to do with it as I wish. And then I let them go and I broke them. Why did he do this? Because he wanted to save them. Why did he want to save them? So this goes into the whole depth of what we're about to launch into this Shabbos, the journey of Elul and Tishrei. It goes into the whole concept of tshuva. Because Moshe Rabbeinu knew that on the level of Torah, if he gives them the Torah, on the level of Torah, they're in big trouble. They violated the Torah. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can break the luchos because I will reveal a deeper connection that the Jewish people have with Hashem, and it will lead to a tshuva, and they will get the second luchos, and it will be even greater than before. And that's the power of tshuva, the whole power of tshuva. Which leads into another word, which I once saw also in this pasuk, where he says, Va'ashabreim le'einechem. That I broke them in front of your eyes. What does it mean in front of your eyes? Obviously he broke in front of your eyes. He was down the mountain. So there's a story I once shared. I don't remember all the details of the story, but it had something to do with the Gerer Rebbe coming out of the war. An amazing story. I forgot that. It's pretty, I remember the details of the story. But there was a Yid who came to the Gerer Rebbe, I think the Imri Emes, if I'm not mistaken, who had escaped the war and lost a lot of his family. And someone came to him, as it happened in those days, some young person who was part of a Hasidic family before the war. Angry, very, very angry. But someone got him to at least talk to the Imre Emes, to the Gerer Rebbe. At first he didn't want to, he wasn't interested, he's giving up the whole thing, but he wanted to talk to the Gerer Rebbe. So they eventually convinced him to talk to the Gerer Rebbe. So the Gerer Rebbe spoke to him, he sat down with him, and he, at first he wouldn't talk. So the Gerer Rebbe waited for him, and he opened, and then eventually it all came out, and he started to cry. And he started to be angry, and he started to scream at Hashem. All the questions that we all have, and you know, understandably so. So the Gerer Rebbe took his hand, cried with him, and said, "Let me first of all share with you that I'm in the same boat as you." So he explained to him that he had lost as much as the boy had lost. He'd also lost his whole family. But he said, "Let me explain to you a pasuk in Chumash." And he brought this pasuk, the Gerer Rebbe. And he said, the pasuk says, the Gerer Rebbe said, look, I can't attempt to explain anything to you. I'm not going to answer your questions. I don't know the answer. We all don't know the answer. No one knows the answer. But one thing I can tell you. I can tell you what this pasuk says. The pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain and he broke the luchos. He broke the luchos. Va'ashabreim le'einechem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I broke the luchos in front of your eyes. He says, what does that verse mean? What do you mean I broke them in front of your eyes? Obviously they could see. What does that mean? He says, no, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying something else. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, breaking the luchos was a terrible thing. In fact, we have a fast day. One of the reasons we fast on the 17th of Tammuz is because Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos. So without minimizing the tragedy of the breaking the luchos, I mean, you have to understand what these luchos were. These luchos were God's handiwork. It was totally from God. He had inscribed it. It was the holiest object that ever existed. and Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing down the mountain about to give it to the Jewish people. So breaking the Luchos was an incredibly tragic event, for which we commemorate the tragedy and we fast on 17th of Tammuz, and it ultimately led to other things that happened in future generations. However, says Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to know, and I'm telling you the story, that Va'ashabrem, at the end of the day, however, that tragedy and that breaking of the Luchos, which you thought was a complete loss, that the Luchos are now gone forever, was only le'einechem, it was only to your eyes. Because in truth, the Luchos were not broken. The real truth is that they were not broken. The proof they were not broken is that the second set of Luchos came. And when the second set of Luchos came, they came greater and they came stronger. Because you thought that the Luchos were broken and that's a tragedy, but it's a tragedy of complete loss. You thought it means it's over. Hashem, that's it. The whole story is over. Hashem gave us the Torah, Ten Commandments. They come down, they're about to be given to us, and boom, they're all broken. So it's all over, in other words. No. Attack a broken Luchos. Terrible tragedy. But it's only le'einechem. It's only what you see. What you don't see is the part of the Luchos that was never broken. As Chazal tell us, the Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos, he broke the stones, but the letters, the neshama of the Luchos were never broken, and they came back afterwards in the second Luchos. So the Gerei Rebbe tells him, we're going to come back, we're going to rebuild. Because yes, terrible destruction, but there's a part you don't see. What we see is we broke. V'ashabrim le'einechem. We see, I broke them in front of your eyes, but what you don't see is the Luchos that aren't broken. And that's, and we're going to rebuild. And so he did, and so did others do as well, in a most amazing, miraculous way. Right? What it's got to do with the process? Look, that's the whole process of tshuva. The process of tshuva is that when we mess up our relationship with Hashem, we break the Luchos. It's not just then. If we transgress, if we do something wrong, if we fail, if we unkind to other people, whatever, if we break a mitzvah, whatever the case is, every time we mess up, it is a mess up. Every time we mess up, we're breaking the Luchos. But there's always the part of Luchos that isn't broken. And that's the part that allows us to do tshuva. And that's the part that allows us to create a second Luchos. And that's the whole theme of Yom Kippur. That's the whole theme of tshuva. That's the whole point, that there's always a part of us that is not broken. And there's always a part of us which is not broken, from which we can rebuild and rebuild even stronger, which is the whole process of tshuva. Because we know that tshuva is not just about repairing what we broke, but tshuva is about repairing what we broke in a stronger way. Coming back that much more stronger, coming back even stronger than we were before. That's the power of tshuva. And that happens from the Luchos. Now, what is that part of us that's not broken? What is in us that's never ever broken? Which part of the Luchos in us are never broken? So for this we have to explore another part of the parasha, which I'm going to connect to this idea. Let's have a look at a famous part of the parasha. Page 990. Very strange paragraph. So bear that question in mind for a couple minutes, because we're going to go on a bit of a journey and come back. Yeah, everyone's okay with me? Good? Okay. So there's a famous pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu turns around to the Jewish people and he says to them the following. Page 990, pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. He says, and now my dear people, he says, Ve'ata Yisrael, now Jewish people, Ma Hashem alekecha shalim. What is Hashem, your God, asking from you? In other words, what does he want from you already? All he wants from you is ki'im le'yiras Hashem alekecha. He wants you to fear God, alechas b'chol derachav, to go in His ways, ala'av o'isayin, to love Him, love Hashem alekecha, to serve Hashem, your God, b'chol levavcha b'chol nashcha, all your heart and all your soul. That's all he wants from you, right? So the Gemara asks a famous question. Isn't that a little ridiculous? What do you mean? It says, I'll use the words of the Gemara. V'chiyira milsa zutra sahi, says the Gemara. Is fearing Hashem, meaning being completely committed to all the mitzvahs and serving Him, that's easy? Moshe is making it like it sounds easy. V'ata Yisrael, and now my Jewish people, what does Hashem want from you? All He wants from you is just fear Him, serve Him, love Him, all your heart, all your soul. That's easy? Good question, huh? So the Gemara answers something that's more bizarre than the question. Gemara says, in yes, legabe Moshe milsa zutrasahi. For Moshe, it's easy. Shkoyach. So what? How does that answer the question? So for Moshe, it's easy. But he wasn't talking to himself, he was talking to the whole Jewish people. So what does it all mean? So I'm going to share with you a mystical idea that answers this question, and what the Gemara means by "for Moshe it was easy." Who was Moshe, and what does it have to do with us, and so on and so forth. So there's a key word in this pasuk. The key word is ma, those two letters. V'ata Yisrael, and now Jewish people, ma Hashem elakecha shalom imach. What does Hashem want from you? But we can read it a bit differently. We can read it, this won't make too much sense at the moment, but once I explain it, it'll make sense. He's saying, V'ata Yisrael, and now Jewish people, Hashem your God is asking from you, you know what he wants from you? He wants from you the memhe, the ma. That's what he wants from you. Not what does he want from you? He wants from you the ma. Okay? Now that can be understood on many levels. Let me just share with you one idea. There's an interesting Gemara from this actually. The Gemara says that we learn from, you know, there's an idea, I don't know if you ever heard of this concept in Halacha, there's an idea to make 100 brachas every day. Have you ever heard this idea? Right? David HaMelech was the one that instituted, and the Shulchan Aruch goes the whole calculation that if you end up davening Shachris Mincha Maariv when you eat and you go to the bathroom a few times, the morning brachas and so on and so forth, it all works out that during the day there's 100 brachas. Where do we know this from? We know this from, you know, there's a concept in Chumash we have called Kri and Ksiv, that sometimes a word is written one way but we have to read it a different way. So the Gemara says that this pasuk that V'ata Yisrael Mo Hashem Alakecha Hashem Limach, what's Hashem asking from you? Don't read the Mo as Mo, read it as Me'a. Right? Me'a means 100. That was Hashem asking you 100. He wants you to make 100 brachas a day. Right? That's interesting. Incidentally, there's a... let me just find this. Give me 1 second. Oh, here we are. Interestingly enough, there's a one of the commentaries of Chumash. It's called the Das Kenim Bale Atoisvus. And he mentions a very interesting thing. You know how words can interchange with Atbash? I've gone through this before. Like the first letter of Al-Bay. He says, you take the word ma, like he says, what's ma got to do with mea? I mean, it doesn't say mea, it says ma, right? So he says, how come you're ending in an aleph? He says, really, it's all hinted in the word ma to begin with. Because the word ma, if you take it at bash, it's yud and tzaddik. Yud and tzaddik is 100, right? So,
you've lost me there.
Yeah, there's a way you can take a word. So for example, in Hebrew, words are interchangeable. Meaning, we have a whole bunch of systems how letters represent other letters. One of the systems we have, which are Talmudic systems, in other words, they're holy systems, not just made-up systems, is that every letter has a counter letter. So, for example, Aleph, which is the first letter of the Aleph base, corresponds to Tof, which is the last letter of the Aleph base, called Atbash. Beis corresponds to Shin. Gimel responds to Resh, and so on. Atbash, Gar, Dak, Hatzvap. Right? That has to do also with the days of Pesach, how you know which yontif, which day is going to fall out. Yes, that's a separate discussion. But so if you take the word ma, mem refers to yud, because yud, in other words, if you give aleph beis gimel, if you work 10 forward, 10 backward, you get yud and mem. So yud interchanges with mem, or mem interchanges with yud, and hey interchanges with tzaddik. Aleph beis gimel dalet hey interchanges with tzaddik. So therefore, ma, mem, and hey, if you interchange them, that system, you get yud and tzaddik, which is the gematria of yud and tzaddik is 100. Interesting. He then also points out an interesting thing. He says that if you actually look at the pasuk, and because based on that, the Torah, the Gemara takes the ma and turns it into mea, right? So ma can be read as mea. And if you read it as mea, interesting enough, if you read this pasuk, there are actually 99 letters in this pasuk. So if you take the word ma and you turn it into mea, in other words, you add an aleph, there's like 100 letters in the pasuk. So that's another way it's hinted. Okay, that's just a nice thing. But I want to share with you a whole deeper idea, and that is like this. We just came from Tisha B'Av. In Tisha B'Av, in the fifth chapter of Eicha, have a look on your handout, I've put the different pasuks here, right? There's a pasuk we read, Zechor Hashem, again, simply read, it's like this. It's the pasuk we read at the end of Eicha, the fifth chapter of Eicha, where we turn to Hashem crying and we say, Zechor Hashem, remember Hashem, Meh or ma hoyolonu, what has happened to us? Right? Remember Hashem, what has happened to us? Okay? So, what are we asking Hashem to remember? First, Hashem doesn't have to remember. Hashem doesn't forget. So, what does it mean? What does it mean we're asking Hashem to remember us? So, in Hasidic literature, it says that this pasuk also, we have to take the word ma and not read it as the word, as a question, but read it as a noun. Alright, you with me? Just like I just told you before in the pasuk where we say that what is Hashem asking from us? Not what is He asking from us, but He's asking from us the ma. Same thing over here. We're asking Hashem, Zechor Hashem, please remember Hashem. Ma hoyolonu. What? Remember what has happened to the ma. Something has happened to the ma. What's the ma? So, go all the way down the handout and have a look at the one time Moshe Rabbeinu used the word ma about himself. Himself and Aaron, actually, but himself particularly. And this has to do with the whole, it's one of the times that the Jews were complaining and complaining against Moshe Rabbeinu, and complaining about the man that was falling from heaven and so on and so forth. So, oh, they didn't have food, whatever the case was. So Moshe Rabbeinu says the following. It's in Shmois. He says, "Uboiker uris, and wait till the morning, and you will see, as kvayd Hashem, the glory of God, b'shomoy as tlunoy seichem, you will see His, when He will listen to your complaints, al Hashem." It says, "Don't complain to me, because," he says, "v'nachnu ma, what am I? What are we? What am I and Aaron? What are we? We are nothing." Kisalinu olav, right? Ma, what are we? In other words, Chassidic literature explains that the word ma is an expression of total, what we call in the language, bittul. Bittul means total nullification, total insignificance, total dependency on something else. Moshe Rabbeinu reached a madrega, he reached a level of ma. What does ma mean? Ma means that Moshe Rabbeinu, his whole being was one that he didn't give himself any significance whatsoever. He felt that he was totally, his reality was nothing. His reality was totally dependent on Hashem. That's the word ma. Ma means what is it? I'll give you an example. You know, we have in a person, when a person starts to think this, something we call, we've done this before, it's called Chochma and Bina. Right? So the first spark of thought, the conception of a thought, is called Chochma. When you develop it into a whole idea that exists, it's called Bina. Right? The word Bina means a building. Lahavin, to build a building, a binyan, a building, an intellectual edifice. Why is Chochma called Chochma? So it explains, in Tanya it says, because Chochma comes from the two words, Koach Ma. In other words, it's the beginning of something, someone's starting to think, but it's an undeveloped thought. It's Ma, what is it? It doesn't actually really exist. It's a potential spark, doesn't actually exist. Every time you want to talk about something that doesn't really exist, you say ma, what is it? It's, in other words, it doesn't really exist. So therefore the word ma is always used for the concept of a feeling of total, no sense of self. In a positive sense, I mean, I don't mean a negative sense. No sense of self meaning that I'm not something, I'm not I have no arrogance, I have no existence, independent existence, but my total existence is only that of Hashem. Now we know that most people, of course, don't feel that way, because we have a very strong sense of self in the negative sense, right? We know that there are very few people who have reached that level. We know that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, for example, said about himself that he reached that level. It says in the Zohar, at the end of his life, on Lag BaOmer, he said, "I've come to the level where I don't feel myself at all. That b'chad ketiro es katarna, I become one with Hashem to such an extent that my whole existence is that of Hashem. In other words, I don't have an independent existence." That's the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Which is why the Gemara says that for Moshe Rabbeinu, fearing God is easy. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is at that level of Ma. His total being is a level of Ma. Okay? However, the question is, what's that got to do with us? So the Zohar says that every person has a Ma in them. That ma might not live on every layer of their existence. But every person has a ma. Every person has a pintel ayid, a neshama, somewhere along the line, where in that part of his or her existence, there's nothing else besides God. In that part of their existence, the clarity is so strong, nothing else exists besides the connection to Hashem. True, we are layered people, and we don't feel that on every single layer, but somewhere deep down in our neshama, There's a Moshe Rabbeinu that lives there. There's a spark of Moshe Rabbeinu that is within every single person. So the Gemara asks the question, is Yira Milsa Zutrasi? Is fearing Hashem an easy thing? So the Gemara says, yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu it's easy. What does that mean? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't trying to make it easy, that's not what he's trying to do. But he was coming to the Yidden and he was saying to them like this, Ve'ato Yisrael, now my Jewish people. Ma Hashem alakecha shom imach. Hashem is asking you to ignite the ma. That's what he's asking you. He's communicating to the Jewish people that the level that I am on, the ma, which I feel in totality throughout every part of my being, you also have. But you have it in a different way. You have it only at a spark level, at a foundational level, somewhere deep down. If you reveal that ma within you, which is hard work, but if you reveal that ma, the rest is easy. Ma Hashem Elokei Hashem Imach, he wants you to ignite the ma. In fact, everything that we do or don't do, everything where we succeed or fail, is dependent on that ma. And that's why when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we ask Hashem, Zechor, remember, help us. What does remember mean? It says that the difference between remembering and forgetting is not by Hashem. It doesn't mean remembering and forgetting. It means what's the difference between being exposed and hidden. So now we're in Golus. The Beis HaMikdash is no longer there. So the ma is very hidden. The ma within us is hidden. That's why in Tisha B'Av we remember that and we say to Hashem, Zechor Hashem, remember God, ma hoyolon, what's happened to our ma? Help us uncover it. Help us expose the ma, that sense of total connection to Hashem and conviction and bond with Hashem that is deep down, but because we're in Golus, it's kind of lost. Now Hashem warned us of what happened, because there's another pasuk in, if you look at the third paragraph of this handout, it says Hashem, there's a pasuk that King Shlomo says in Koheles. He says, "Uzachoyr es boyrecha b'mei b'choresecha." Remember God when you're young. That's what it means. But don't wait till you're old. Remember Hashem when you're young. But the Mefarshim explain there's a difference over here. It says, "Uzachoyr es boyrecha." Remember your Creator, b'mei b'choresecha, in the days when you were chosen, b'chira. What does that mean? You know the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam calls it the laws of Beis HaBechira, the chosen house. Hashem begged us. He says, you remember Hashem when there's a Bechira, when there's a Beis HaMikdash. But we didn't. So now we come to Hashem and say, help us. Zechor es Hashem. Meho Yalona. What's happened to the man? So when it comes, what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling the Jews is this. You might think that sometimes the ma is hidden. You might think that you lost. You might think you disconnected. But it's all wrong. Because there's a ma which exists within every single person. And Hashem, Shoyel Me'imach, Hashem is asking you to reveal the ma. Because no matter where we've gone, no matter how far we might have fallen, the ma always remains complete. It's very hidden, but it always remains complete, and it gives us the ability to rebuild. And that's what Moshe Ben is asking the Jewish people. Never give up. Why? Because you have the ma. Says the Gemara, why? Is it easy to serve Hashem? No. Says the Gemara, because for Moshe Ben it's easy. What does that mean? Because Moshe Ben was one big total ma. He said, Ki ma, what are we? We're just nachnu ma, we're just a ma. Because his whole being was a ma. Your being is not a ma, but you have the ma in you. You have that spark of Moshe Ben in you, you have to bring it out. When is the best time to bring it out? When do we expose the ma within every single neshama? When's the time to do that? Always. When's the time special to do that? The time of El. The time of El and Tishrei. Because that's the time that Hashem gives us that ability to dig deep and to expose the part of our neshama that was never damaged. The part of our neshama that's always with Hashem. Right? That's why, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we're skipping ahead a little bit of here, and I'm not trying to make everyone nervous to sort of think of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur too soon. But it depends how we view Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You see, some people view Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur as a scary time. We shouldn't view it like that. We should look at it as a beautiful time. As a beautiful time where Hashem is particularly close to us, where Hashem gives us that unbelievable opportunity. Hashem gives us that amazing closeness and bond where we can reveal the ma. That's why, you know, in the 10 days of Tshuva, we have a minna, we say an extra piece of Tilim. Every day in Davening, chapter 130 in Tilling, where we say Shir HaMalos, Mima'amakim Karasicha Hashem. I call to you, Hashem, from the depths of my heart. Mima'amakim, from the depths. And the Farshim asks why we have the plural depths. She says we're talking about two depths, because what happens is, as we've always talked about many, many times, that there's a relationship which we have with Hashem, which is a functional relationship, an operational relationship, where we keep the mitzvahs, we learn Torah, and so on and so forth. But then there comes a time we have to reveal a deeper relationship, which is a relationship between, so to speak, Hashem's depth and our depth. Hashem's depth is His essential love for us, His unconditional love for us. Our depth is the Ma, which is in our neshama, that part of the neshama that's always one with Hashem. Just not fully exposed, but it's always one with Hashem. When it comes to the time of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, with the preparation of the month of Elul, we have Mima'amakim Kerasich Hashem. We're able to call out to God, we're able to build a relationship with Hashem, Mima'amakim, from the depths, meaning the depths of the relationship. That's the time to bring out the Ma. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us. In continuation of the Luchos, he said, I took the Luchos and I broke them. They were mine. I grabbed them. I took possession of them and I grabbed them. Why did I grab them? This is the Torah. This is the manual. How come I grabbed it? How come I broke it? Because I needed to. I needed to get you guys off the hook. Why did I do that? Because all is not lost. I didn't really break it. I only broke it on one level. But there's the deeper level where the Luchos are not broken, because the Ma is always there. Your bond with Hashem is always there. And therefore, later on in the Parsha, he says, you got a second chance. You got the second Luchos, because from the Ma, which is always there, you can always rebuild. You can always come back with a second Luchos, which is even greater than the first. And therefore, he says, Va'ati Yisrael, and now, Jewish people, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shol Me'imach. God is asking for you one thing, the Ma. Dig deep and find that part of you which is pure and connected to Hashem, and the rest is relatively easy. That part is hard, but that's what Hashem wants from you, and then the rest you can build on. Okay.